I think the most appropriate place to begin our discussion of Parshas Bo is the place where Rashi tells us that one may have thought was the appropriate place to begin the entire Torah. The very first comment of Rashi in Parshas Bereishis, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, even before he talks about Bereishis, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, lo haya tzarech lahaschil, the Torah, one may have thought, should have really began with the words, Achodesh Azalachem, that's the that was given to Bnei Yisrael, Achodesh Azalachem, Kiddush Achodesh. Why does it begin, therefore, with Bereishis? The premise behind the question is that the Torah is, teaches us how to fulfill the mitzvah, so it should begin with the first mitzvah. But rather, it began with Bereishis because, quoting the pasuk in Tehillim, "Koach ma'asav higid la'amo la'seif lahem nachlas goyim," HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he told us of everything that he did, his power and wonders, in order to give us Eretz Yisrael. As Rashi proceeds to say, if the Umos Ha'olam will say, "Listem atem, you're bandits and thieves, you're taking this land, it doesn't belong to you," so to them we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world, everything belongs to him, whoever was living there before, he took it from there and gave it to us. And this is actually, according to Rashi, although it's a chiddush, essentially justifies 14 parshas in the Torah, beginning with Bereishis all the way until the beginning of the mitzvahs. And I think it's fair to say, although this evening we will not be focusing so much on that Rashi, but really the important question is, for whose benefit is this message? As if to say, the nations of the world say, "Listem atem, you're bandits." So to come to them with the Chumash, they may be of limited interest to them. They're about as interested in the Chumash as they are in us being here, even with Rashi's commentary. And therefore it seems quite clear that the recipients of the message are not necessarily the nations of the world who may or may not receive it, but the Jewish people themselves. The Jewish people need to know what they're doing in the land of Israel, even if other people aren't listening, to be aware of how this land comes to be ours. And that's the famous opening of Rashi, and therefore to come back to his question, the Torah should have began with the words HaChodesh HaZalachem, which is in Shmos, Perek, Yud Beis, Pasuk Beis. And let's take a look there, because as we will see, there are two meanings advanced by Rashi for the words HaChodesh HaZalachem. What does it mean, HaChodesh HaZalachem Rosh Chodashim? We think we know what it means on a simple level, but Rashi gives us two perushim. The first perush on the words HaChodesh HaZeh says Rashi, Hera levana b'chidusha HaZeh. The word Zeh always refers to something you can point to. Ba'avor Zeh lo amarti ela b'sheh shmatzu umar menachem lefanecha. And therefore HaChodesh HaZeh means HaKadosh, what the moon looks like at the time when it should be sanctified as Kiddush HaChodesh. Va'amalo k'sheirech mitzchadesh yelecho Rosh Chodesh. When the moon looks like this, and he showed him the moon, then it's Rosh Chodesh. Which means, according to Rashi, HaChodesh HaZalachem Rosh Chodashim is not about the relationship of this month to other months, but of the moon to every month. The month like this, this is what Rosh Chodashim looked like. Every Rosh Chodesh looks like this. Which means Rashi's first perush is that the reference here is to Kiddush HaChodesh. Okay. But then Rashi says, famous words, Ve'ein mikrayotzi midei pshuto. But the pasuk never leaves its simple, straightforward meaning. Interestingly, Rashi brings the pshat second. But the pshuto is that it is about this month vis-a-vis other months. Al Chodesh Nisan Amalo. He was talking about this month, Nisan, Zeye Rosh Laseda Minyan Achadoshim. This is the first month of the year for you. Sheye Iyar Korosheni, Sivan Shlishi, all the other months, they're really, the year is the second month, and Sivan is the third month, because Nisan is the first month. And to understand on a straightforward level why it is that Nisan is the first month, after all, we're familiar with the Tishrei being the first month, and we refer to the beginning of Tishrei as Rosh Hashanah. What then is the meaning of having another time to begin counting the months? Well, Ramban discusses this matter at length, and Ramban says that essentially it's an emanation of Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, as if to say, you'll always remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, which the Torah emphasizes with so many mitzvahs, daily and periodically and annually. And this is one of them, that you'll always look back to Nisan as the first month, because that's the month you came out of Mitzrayim. And if we may say, to add some words of Bior, what the Ramban is saying is that when is the first month? The month is when it all began. So when is it all? Well, the world generally began in Tishrei. But what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying here is that the Jewish people begin in Nisan. And therefore, if we look to count, reckon the months from the beginning, it's a new beginning. It's a new way of looking at the beginning. We no longer take our cue from the creation of the world, but we take our cue in terms of reckoning the months from the creation of the Jewish people. Amzu yatzarti li, chilasi yisaperu. So we move from creation of the world to formation of the Jewish people, and it's a new start, and we count the months from there. Reb Avraham Gurewitz, Shalita of Gateshead, presents another angle to Nisan, in a sense, taking over from Tishrei as the beginning of the year. When we come back to what Rashi stated, that first Rashi in the Torah, and Rashi told us that Rabbi Yitzchak says the Torah, one could have said, should have began with HaChodesh HaZalach. Why? Because that's the first mitzvah that Bnei Yisrael were commanded with. Now, that itself is an interesting statement in terms of mitzvahs. And the reason why is because HaChodesh HaZalachem, as Kiddush HaChodesh, is not the first mitzvah mentioned in the Torah. Bereishis doesn't have many mitzvahs, but it has some mitzvahs. It has the mitzvah of Mila, it has the mitzvah of Masros, it has the mitzvah of Yid HaNoshe, as we discussed a few weeks ago from the words of the Rambam. Some of them are more explicit in the Pasuk, some of them less so, but there are mitzvahs in Chumash Bereishis. And yet, interestingly, even when Rabbi Yitzchak is looking to perhaps delay the beginning of the Torah to the beginning of receiving mitzvahs, he doesn't say it should have begun when Avram was told about Mila or when Yaakov was told about Yid HaNoshe, but specifically, the starting point should have been Kiddush HaChodesh. Why is Kiddush HaChodesh considered the first mitzvah in the Torah if there are mitzvahs before? Well, the answer that those mitzvahs that were given in Chumash Bereishis were given to individuals. And at the end of the day, they were only binding for those individuals from that time onwards until Matan Torah. Once Matan Torah happens, everything is binding as a result of Matan Torah. That's the point that the Rambam emphasizes famously in his Perish HaMishnayos, in Maseches Chulin, in the seventh Perek. And therefore, when we think about or talk about the giving of mitzvahs, the transmitting of mitzvahs, we're not really talking about that process until mitzvahs are given to the Jewish people. The first mitzvah to be given to the Jewish people is Kiddush HaChodesh. Because whereas it's true that generally mitzvahs are given to Am Yisrael at Har Sinai, but we see the process begins to a certain degree already in Parshas Bo. The Jewish people, as a people, are already given the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. They're already given the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, and its related mitzvahs are quite a significant number of mitzvahs are given, even before Har Sinai. That's already the process of giving Matan Torah, really. And therefore, this is the beginning point of mitzvahs. Now, that being the case, we're mindful of Rashi's comment again in Parshas Bereishis, Vayera Vayvoka Yom HaShishi, which describes the creation of the world and the culmination of the creation of the world. And Rashi tells us that the word HaShishi means until Matan Torah, the world is not yet fully created. It either is could very easily be disassembled, or it's not fully solidified. The creation is not completed until the giving of the Torah. And that's why until Yom HaShishi, significantly, Shishi, of course, the sixth of Sivan, the day of Matan Torah, or as we're seeing the process that's already beginning in Parshas Bo, that's when the creation of the world is complete. And indeed, there's a very interesting comment of the Vilna Gaon in his Perush to Haggadah Shel Pesach, when he talks about the section of Baruch HaMokom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shana Santoro La'ama Yisrael, Baruch Hu, and everyone discusses what are those four things, and maybe they're really two things, but what even are those two things? What's Baruch HaMokom and what's Baruch Shana Santoro La'ama Yisrael? And the Vilna Gaon explains that these two phrases are two iterations of the same thing. We refer to Hashem as HaMokom because he created the world, he created space, and therefore Baruch HaMokom is Hashem as creator, Baruch Hu. And then we say, Baruch Shanosan Torah La'am Yisrael, Baruch Hu. That's an additional layer, and it's additional layer of creation, as if to say the creation began with Mako, with Hashem creating space, Parshas Bereishis. But then the world was, the culmination of the creation of the world is actually with Baruch Shanosan Torah La'am Yisrael, Baruch Hu. That's the Makeh B'Patish, that's the final stage of creation. We've mentioned in the past as well, in a similar vein, the comment of the Netziv in his introduction to the HaMikdavar to Chumash Shemos, where he notes that the Baal Halachos Gedolos, which is already from the time of the Gaonim, he has names for each of the Chumashim, and some of them will be familiar to us, some perhaps less so. He gives them characteristic names, and therefore he'll call Bereishis Chumash HaYetzira, I mean that's the creation. He'll call Vayikra Taras Kohanim, and he'll call Bamidbar Chumash HaPekudim, counting numbers, and he'll call Devarim Mishnah Torah, the review of the Torah, to oversimplify. And what about Shemos? So Shemos, the Baal Halachos Gedolos calls it Chumash Sheni, the second Chumash. And compared with distinctly uncharacteristic, because each one has something about the content of the Sefer. Chumasheni kind of sounds like there wasn't really much to say, so it's number two, so you call it Chumasheni. How is that a name? How does it take its place alongside all of those other characteristic names? But the Netziv explains that what the Baal Halachos Gedolos is saying is that if Chumash Bereishis is Chumash HaYetzira, it's the Sefer of creation, and Chumash Shemos is Chumash Sheni, it's the second Sefer of creation. That's the point. It's part two of Bereishis, because Bereishis is about the creation of the world, and that's a process that did not conclude until Chumash Sheni, until Shemos with the giving of the Torah. And indeed, that's how he explains from such a grand discussion to each of the particulars, as is the way with Gedolei Torah, everything gets analyzed. That explains why Chumash Shemos begins with a Vav. Ve'ele Shemos. Now, anyone who knows anything about how to write a Sefer, I mean, you cannot start a Sefer with the word and. It's not appropriate. This is not to be confused, by the way, with Vayikra, which begins with a Vav, and Bamidbar, which begins with a Vav, because that's the Vav Ahipuch. Vayikra and Vayidaber, those who are medactic maintain that the Vav HaHipuch is not even meant to be translated as and. It serves purely to turn the past to the future to the past, which means Vayikra is not to be translated and he called, but simply he called. Vayidaber is not to be translated and he said, but rather he said. The Vav, if it functions as the Vav HaHipuch, as the Vav conversive, it doesn't translate and. The Vav conjunctive. But Ve'ele Shemos B'nei Yisrael literally starts with and. How can you do that? Except and serves to connect this Sefer with the earlier Sefer. That's exactly what the Bahag is saying, the Baal Halachos Gedolos is saying, that Bereishis began with Bereishis and it continued into Shemos Chumash Sheni with the giving of the Torah is the conclusion, the culmination of the Bria. That's a major Yisod. And therefore, says Rav Avraham Gurewitz, perhaps this can give us a further dimension in understanding why it is that we're told to begin to count the months with the month of Nisan. Until that point it was Tishrei, but at this point it's Nisan. What does Tishrei represent? The creation of the world. We count from creation. Yes. But having established that with the words HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, the process of Matan Torah, it's the first mitzvah to Bnei Yisrael. The process of Matan Torah has begun. If the process of Matan Torah has begun, then the culmination of the creation of the world has begun. And therefore we move to the further level, for us the more meaningful level of the creation of the world. As if to say, when we move the beginning of the year from Tishrei to Nisan, we're not taking the focus away from creation to something else. We're taking the focus away from basic creation to higher creation as solidified by the giving of the Torah. And in fact, I believe one may add that this will give us deeper insight into the fusion of the two Perushim of Rashi on the words HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, as we quoted. The first Perush of Rashi is, it's a mitzvah. The mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, that's mitzvah number one. The second Perush Rashi says, Ein mekoyotzim midepshuto, that HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim is a reference to Nisan vis-a-vis the other month, that this is the first month and they all take their cue from Nisan. So it's fascinating to consider. I wondered very often over the years how these two go together. They're so different. It's rare that we have something that on the one hand it's a mitzvah, but on the other hand it's more of a description. It seems to be quite different, these two Perushim. One's about the month of Nisan, and yet somehow the two got fused together. Except I believe, according to what Rav Avraham is saying, we understand the point of fusion. Because the pshat of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim is Nisan is the first month. But the reason why Nisan is the first month and the basis upon which Nisan is the first month is the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, which begins the process of giving mitzvahs to Bnei Yisrael. That's what makes it the first month. And thus the two are combined in these words. So that's the comment of Rabbi Avraham Lurwitz with regards to Nisan being the new Rosh Hashanah, so to speak. And in this regard, there is more. There's a fascinating point to ponder here, once again with regards to Matan Torah, giving of the mitzvahs, which begins here. If we move back one pasuk to Perek Yud Beis, pasuk Aleph, we will see how the whole thing is introduced. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe vel Aaron be'eretz Mitzrayim le'mor. This whole parsha of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem and everything that comes with it is something that Hashem said to Moshe and to Aaron. And Rashi comments. Rashi explains what Aaron is doing here. How is he also a recipient of the mitzvah? Rashi says, Bishvil she'aaron asa v'torach b'mofsim k'moshe. In recognition of the fact that Aaron was equally involved and exerted himself and invested himself in producing the signs and wonders like Moshe did, he was equally involved. Cholak lo kavod de b'mitzvah rishona. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him kavod. He gave him this honor, this distinction. In the first mitzvah, again Rashi calls this the first mitzvah, shekelolo im Moshe b'dibur, that Hashem grouped him together, joined him together with Moshe. In other words, it's a very interesting comment of Rashi. When the pasuk says that Hashem said this to Moshe and Aaron, Rashi says this needs explanation. And the reason why it needs explanation is because as soon as we move into the realms of transmitting mitzvahs, as far as we're concerned, the default expectation is only Moshe is spoken to about Kodesh Baruch Hu, about mitzvahs. Moshe receives them and then transmits them to Bnei Yisrael. Torah Siva Lanu Moshe, that's the unique level of Moshe, his unique level as a person, as a Navi. And therefore, all things being equal, we would not have expected Aaron to be there. Lo and behold, Aaron is here. That's something that needs to be explained. And Rashi explains it. And in fact, the more we understand how it should only really be Moshe, I think the greater the chiddush is that Aaron is there. Because why is he there? He exerted himself with the signs and wonders. That's amazing. But to consider his reward is even more amazing, because he gets entry into a bracket that he wouldn't naturally ever be. And thus, Aaron is also a recipient of this first mitzvah. Now, Rav Kupferman, that's all, points out that it's interesting to note that here we are, we're somewhat surprised that anyone other than Moshe should receive a mitzvah. But isn't it true that historically people other than Moshe received mitzvahs? Isn't it true that Avram received the mitzvah of of Mila, and so on and so forth, all of those gracious mitzvahs. Should we be surprised that also require explanation? I mean, Moshe hasn't been born yet, so. But nonetheless, says Rav Kupperman, no. Because once again, to remind ourselves that those mitzvahs are not yet Matan Torah. What's the exclusive domain of Moshe Rabbeinu is Matan Torah, that is to say, to receive the mitzvahs on behalf of Bnei Yisrael. Avram never received mitzvahs on behalf of Bnei Yisrael. He received the mitzvah of Mila for himself and for his descendants until Matan Torah. That's not yet the unique domain of Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore if Avram receives it 100%, that's fine, and so on with Yitzhak. We only need to explain the phenomenon when we're talking about the national transmission of mitzvahs to Am Yisrael, and that's why Rashi comments here. And yet, and this is now a very delicate point, very delicate parshanut point, as true as it is that Aaron somehow made it in as his reward, and he's also receiving the mitzvahs along with Moshe, nonetheless, says Rav Kupperman, this is not a full exception to the idea that only Moshe receives mitzvahs. Because at the end of the day, we have not yet reached Har Sinai. As if to say, we are essentially in what could be called a transitional time. It's a transitional in the sense that we've moved from mitzvahs being given to an individual to mitzvahs being given to the nation. Yes, that has moved, but it isn't yet at Har Sinai, which has the full voltage, we could say, of Matan Torah. And indeed, this can be verified by consulting the Teras Kohanim at the beginning of Parshas Vayikra. For there, the Teras Kohanim tells us that there were 13 Dibros that were said to Moshe and Aaron. If you look through the Chumash, you'll see Mefarshim get very involved exactly how to reckon these times. But if you look through, says the Teras Kohanim, there were 13 occasions where Moshe and Aaron are mentioned together as receiving the mitzvahs. And you should know, says Teras Kohanim, that corresponding to those 13 times, there are 13 additional exclusionary phrases, miyutim, to ensure us that actually it was not Aaron receiving the mitzvah. He's placed in the pasuk, again, as covered, but it wasn't him receiving the mitzvah together with Moshe. So you have 13 inclusions, and then instantly they're accompanied by 13 exclusions, as if to say, even if Aaron is mentioned in the pasuk, but he's not really receiving the mitzvah together with Moshe. But what's interesting is, our pasuk is not on that list. Our pasuk didn't make it into that group of psukim where, you know, it was said to Moshe and Aaron, but it wasn't really to Aaron. It's not on the list. But why is it not on the list? Does it not require the same treatment? Says Rav Kupperman, you see from here that it is only post-Matan Torah, and with, that is to say, post-Har Sinai, from Har Sinai and onwards, at that point, the level of Kabbalah HaTorah, the level of intensity of transmission of the mitzvahs, is something that can only be experienced and vouchsafed for Moshe alone. If Aaron's in the pasuk, but he wasn't part of the experience, that you need to know. But that's only true from Har Sinai and onwards. However, since in our situation, it was before Har Sinai, therefore, if Aaron's in the pasuk, he may well have been in the experience. He's not precluded from receiving a mitzvah before Har Sinai. And the truth of the matter is, this bears out our understanding that the mitzvahs of Parshas Bo, they are, as we say, a transitional time. It's already mitzvahs to the nation, but nonetheless not yet the full power, potency of transmission of mitzvahs at Har Sinai. Aaron can be a part of that. And really, a corollary of this idea is that as surely as, if we say, all mitzvahs were given at Sinai, Torah, right, Torah mitzvahs kibbal Moshe b'Sinai, that means that as surely as the mitzvahs that were given to the Avos as individuals were given again to Moshe for Bnei Yisrael, so too these mitzvahs of Parshas Bo, even though they were given to the Jewish people, they were also given again to Moshe at Har Sinai because they needed to be, quote-unquote, upgraded to the level of Sinai. And should we say, and this is with this, we conclude this segment, should we say, how can we tell So far, it's a difference in geography. This is Mitzrayim, this is Sinai. How do we know there's a difference in the level of intensity and potency of the transmission of the mitzvah? Well, says Rav Kupperman, and again, the roots are in the Malbim here, the trademark presentation or introductory phrase for any mitzvah is the word Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Lemor. Here, the pasuk opens with the words Vayomer Hashem El Moshe Ve'El Aaron. What is the difference between the word Vayidaber and the word Vayomer? They both mean to say or to speak, but as we know, the word Dibor always has a more intense connotation. Sometimes that means that the Dibor is harsher. As we say, Dibor is Lashon Kosha. Things that are harsh are called Dibor. Things that are said more benignly are Lashon Amira. Rashi tells us that in a couple of places. But according to many Mefarshim, at the root of the distinction is the fact that, aside from anything else, if you look at the word Diber, Vayidaber, the construct of that word is known as PL, which is intense. Vayomer is known as kal. It's the straightforward. And the difference between the kal and the PL is one is straightforward and one is intense. As surely as if something gets broken, there are two ways to describe that. Either shavar or shiber. What's the difference between shavar and shiber? They would be translated differently into English. Shavar would mean he broke. And shiber would mean he smashed. Because the PL of Shiber is much more intensive. And therefore, you can see the marker of the intensity of Har Sinai. A mitzvah given at that level is introduced generally with the word Vayidaber. That's the marker for a Har Sinai transmission, as opposed to this mitzvah, which is said at the beginning of Perek Yud Beis, begins with the more benign Vayomer Hashem Moshe. It is Har Sinai minus. And therefore, this is something that even Aaron could be a part of. So as I say, from these seemingly simple words, Vayomer Hashem El Moshe El Aaron, Achodesh Zelachem, many, many important yesodos come out in Parshanut and in understanding the different levels of the transmissions of mitzvahs to Yechidim, to Am Yisrael, and so on and so forth. Now, as part of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we have, of course, the famous Achrichen Yetzir B'chush Gadol. When the Jewish people leave, they don't just leave, they leave in style. They leave with riches. And that's actually referred to on Erev Yetzias Mitzrayim in Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Beis. This is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets things moving there. Daber not, Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Beis. Daber not, speak, please, seemingly, Ba'ozne Ha'am, in the ears of the people, V'ishalu ish me'esri ehu, V'isha me'esri usak le'chesef u'chle zahav. They should borrow or ask of their neighbors vessels of gold and silver. This is the beginning of the Rechush Gadol. Rashi famously comments from the Gemara Maseches Brachos and Daftes on the usage of the word na. And na, if you translate as please, means Hashem is requesting of Moshe. When do the people ever need to be requested to borrow gold and silver? It sounds like it's the sort of thing they'd volunteer to do. But somehow they need to be it needs to be asked of them as a request. And Rashi says from the Gemara, Ein na el eloshen bakosha. It is a request. Hashem says to Moshe, I request of you to ask them to do this. Why? Shelo yomer osa tzadik Avram. And he was the one who was told about this from the beginning. Bavadum ve'inu osam, v'achrecheinu tzibuchosh gadol. And he shouldn't say to me that you fulfilled that v'avadum ve'inu osam, and then you didn't fulfill v'achrecheinu tzibuchosh gadol. And therefore, so that Avram shouldn't say that to me and complain to me, so please do me a favor, ask them to do this, and then everyone will be happy. And of course, the Rashi is a Pele, because if Hashem says, Achrichen Yitzu B'chush Gadol, then that's the reason why it should be done. Not just because if he doesn't do it, Avram will complain. That seems to be a rather non-essential reason. And many, many Mefarshim deal with this question. I think the most straightforward answer or of the more straightforward answers, which I think it's given by the Torah to Mima, is very simply that if Hashem says that they will leave Rechush Gadol, that's not something you can force them to do. It's for their benefit. But what if they would forego it? What if they're not interested? It's for them. And if they don't want, they don't want. They're moichel. And indeed, the Gemara says the Jewish people were actually reluctant to do this, as if to say they're about to leave. They're almost out the door. And now you start saying, no, go to your neighbors and borrow things. Maybe they don't want to talk to their neighbors. Mm-hmm. And moreover, there's also, anyone who's got their eyes open understands that if they're borrowing things, then they haven't seen the last of the Egyptians. Wouldn't it be better just to make a clean break, as if to say, let's just go. I don't want to have Plony, my Egyptian neighbor's items with me. He may come after them. I don't want to see him again. I don't see any of this again. And indeed, the Gemara says, in Maseches Brachos there in Daf Tes, that was exactly the attitude of the Jewish people. They just said, Ulevai shenetze me'atzmenu. Let's just go. Can we please just leave? I don't want to get involved. I don't want gold and silver. I just want to go. And therefore, in terms of the promise, on a very straightforward level, if it's for their benefit, they have the right to forego it. It can't be forced on them. But that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, as much as it's currently difficult and they don't have the koach for it and they don't have the inclination for it, but please ask them to do this, because Avram, who knows what's best for them, he has a broader, he will complain to me that I let them leave without the Rechush Gadol, and therefore give them a bit of a nudge. That's Daber No. What's interesting is, and the reason why I mention this as a prelude, is that the Pasuk states later on in Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Lamed Vav, the Pasuk states that they did this. They did ask. And they borrowed all these things. And the Pasuk says at the end, Perek Yud Beis, Lamed Vav, Vayinatzlu Es Mitzrayim. Vayinatzlu Es Mitzrayim. What does that mean, Vayinatzlu Es Mitzrayim? Well, look in Unkelus. He will help us. Unkelus translates the word Vayinatzlu as Virokinu Yas Mitzrayim. They emptied out Mitzrayim. So it's an interesting shift, in a sense. Initially, they didn't want to do anything. But once they got going, they emptied the whole place out. Vayinatzlu Es Mitzrayim, Virokinu Yas Mitzrayim. And also of interest is the Gemara provides words of explanation. Just how thoroughly did they empty out Mitzrayim? And we might have thought it doesn't need explanation. Empty means empty. What else is there to say? Verokinu means verokinu. And yet the Gemara says, no, here's a way to understand just how much they emptied it out. And it gives two mishalim, two images. One, says the Gemara, kimitsuda she'ein badogon. It's like a trap that has no food in it. People used to set traps for animals. They put food in, the animal sees the food, then he gets trapped. There was no food in the trap. It was completely empty. That's how empty it was. Okay. And the second perush, the second moshul given by the Gemara there, Brachas Daf Tes, is kimitsula she'ein badogin. It's like the depths of water that have no fish in it. Devoid of fish. That's how empty Mitzrayim was of its gold and silver. So it's a very interesting situation, because generally speaking, a moshel is given to help me understand something which would otherwise be abstract or perhaps obtuse in some way. Here, empty means empty. It's actually the moshel that I don't fully understand. As if to say, it's like a trap that has no food. It's like the depths that have no fish. I'm happy that the trap has no food and the depths have no fish. But what's it got to do with me? And this question, I mean, at the end of the day, what is the goal of these mishalim? What are they helping me to understand? Says the Maskela David, actually, the goal of these mishalim is that they will help us deal with a question that we would otherwise have. And that question is based on a pasuk in next week's parsha, in after Shiras Hayam, in Perek Tesvav Pasuk Kaf Beis, where the pasuk says, "Vayasa Moshe es ha'am mi yamsuf." Vayasa, Moshe made Bnei Yisrael. That's a hifil. We're back to our grammar. That's a hifil. He caused the Jewish people to move on. That's not par for the course. Normally, when the Jewish people travel, it says Vayisu, Vayisa, Vayisu, and here it's Vayasa. It sounds like the Jewish people themselves needed to be moved on. Why? Says the Medrash Yerushalayim, and it's quoted by Rashi, because when the Jewish people, when Mitzrayim chased after Bnei Yisrael, so they took all their gold and silver with them as an incentive. Whoever comes with me will be able to partake of not only of the spoils of the Jewish people, but also of these, an added incentive. The Egyptians needed an incentive by that point. They'd also had a little bit had enough. And therefore, when they all drowned in the Yamsuf, well, over the course of time, things started to wash up. Gold and silver and such like, which means the Jewish people actually were not in a hurry to move. They were quite happy to stay and see what else would happen. Perhaps this is the origins of the term the banks of the Red Sea. Or at the very least, offshore deposits, one could say. But be that as it may, says the Medrash Yerushalayim, the spoils and the treasure that was brought to the Yam Suf on the seventh day of Pesach was greater than what the Jewish people took on the first day of Pesach. Gedola haisa bizas hayam mibizas Mitzrayim. And now, says Maskil HaDavid, anyone who's been paying attention will have a question. And that is, how can you say on the one hand that when we left Mitzrayim, we emptied the place out, but on the other hand, tell me that there was more left than what we took? I mean, that doesn't add up. Checks and balances. And there are two classic answers to this question. Clearly, as much as we emptied the place out, but there was more left, where is that more? Some say that the great treasure that they took to the Yam Suf on the seventh day of Pesach was Paro's personal treasure. As if to say, not hard to imagine that when we knocked on our neighbor's doors for gold and silver, no one actually made their way to Paro's house to knock on his door. So his riches remained intact, and that's what was brought. When it says they emptied out Mitzrayim, they've emptied out regionally their neighbors, but no one actually went to Paro. Which means, incidentally, that Paro was single-handedly richer than everyone else in his country, which remains true in many locales. Alternatively, says Maskil HaDavid, the pasuk says Vayinatlu es. It could be again. Everyone knocked on their neighbor's house, which means that they took the gold and silver from where they were locally. But Eretz Mitzrayim is a big place. It doesn't say Vayinatlu es Eretz Mitzrayim. Right, the outlying regions outside of Goshen or wherever it may be. I mean, Mitzrayim is a big place. There's plenty of other places they never got to. How far can they travel? And says Maskil HaDavid, very wonderfully, this is what's being communicated to us by the Mishalim of the trap and of the depths, the Metsuda and the Metsula. They're coming to address what it means when it says by Yinaslo et Mitzrayim that there could still be some there. You see, if we begin with the Mishal of the trap, so what happens is, this trap means this food is available. And if there's no food in the trap, it doesn't mean that the owner of the trap doesn't have any food. It just means it's not available in the trap. It's not accessible. And that corresponds to the understanding that it was actually Paro, right? Melech Mitzrayim, the owner of Mitzrayim, he still has plenty, even though there was nothing left in terms of what was available and accessible. That corresponds to the understanding that they emptied out from the rank and file, but not from Paro. They took from the trap, but they didn't take from the owner of the trap. And the second mashal, k'mitzula she'ein badagim, as Rashi explains, mitzula is the depth. The mashal is that where it's deep, there's no fish. But as you get closer to the banks and the outlying areas, where the depth is in the middle, but as it gets shallower as you in the outlying section, so there are yet fish. And that corresponds to the understanding that it was really at the center where the concentrations, where the Jewish people were, that's where there was nothing left. But in outlying areas, there was still plenty left, indeed more left, and that's what came in. So it's a very interesting approach to these rather enigmatic sounding mishalim, which are coming to explain something to me that I didn't even feel needed explaining. If we keep an eye on the entire picture, we'll see the value of what those mishalim are coming to tell us. Well, let's conclude by taking a look at one of the famous, I would say, psukim of Parshas Bo. We mentioned it on Seder night, at the Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Lamed Tes. And as we will see, quite a bit to say. Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Lamed Tes reads, Vayofuas Habotzek, Asher Utsiyum Mitzrayim, Ugos Matzos Kilo Chometz. They baked the dough that they took from Mitzrayim as matzos, not chometz. Why? Kigarshu Mitzrayim, because they were thrown out of Mitzrayim. They couldn't tarry. They hadn't made provisions, and therefore they baked in a hurry because they left in a hurry, and the result was matzah. Now, if we take this pasuk at face value, it's telling us that the reason why Bnei Yisrael did not bake chometz, but rather they baked matzah, is because they left in a hurry. The problem is, earlier on in Perek Yud Beis, the Jewish people have already been presented with the mitzvahs of Pesach, and one of the mitzvahs of Pesach is you're not allowed to have chometz in your possession, which means they couldn't have baked chometz even if they tried. It's usur. Therefore, if in any case it would be not permissible for them to allow it to become chometz, why does the pasuk ascribe the fact that it was matzah to them leaving in a hurry? That is a question that occupies the attention of all of the mefarshim. And as we'll see, there are a number of approaches to this question. Again, in brief, to state, why does the pasuk ascribe the matzah and not chometz to them leaving in a hurry? They can't bake chometz anyway. It's Pesach. This question is discussed by the Ran in the end of Maseches Psachim, and the Ran suggests there is actually an opinion, it's Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, being 7 days, was only in subsequent Pesachs, but the original Pesach was only the one day. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili in the Mishnah. Pesach Mitzrayim was for one day. And the Ran continues, or extends this idea, and says not only, according to Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, was that original Pesach limited in scope, time-wise, but also limited in scope in terms of its mitzvahs, as if to say, the full Pesach was not yet in play. In that first Pesach, when they left, it was only one day, not the full 7, and moreover, not all of the mitzvahs yet applied there. It was at that stage still mutter to own chometz on that first Pesach. And that is why the Pasuk states that in the end, they didn't bake chometz, but not because it was forbidden for them, but rather because they left in a hurry. And that first Pesach, Pesach Mitzrayim, it was not forbidden for them to bake chametz. And this idea is actually echoed by the Bartanura in his Perush on Rashi, as a short Perush on Rashi. And the Bartanura says, you know, if you look through the psukim of Perek Yud Beis, you'll see something very interesting. They seem to be divided into two groups. Psukim Gimel to Yud Gimel are all about Korban Pesach. As you go through them, and there's plenty to discuss about all of them, but essentially, in a nutshell, Gimel to Yud Gimel is all about Korban Pesach. Then Pasuk Yud Dalet reads, V'haya hayom azel zikaron, v'chagosem aso chag l'ashem, l'doroseichem chugas onom techaguhu. Pasuk Yud Dalet is the Pasuk which tells us that this festival is for all time. It's for all generations. And then it goes on to talk about not baking chametz and not eating chametz and all of those things. And the Bartanura, in a sense, even more extreme, shall we say, than the Ran, understands that everything after Pasuk Yud Dalet is part of Pesach L'doroseichem, which includes the prohibition of owning chametz, and even according to the Bartanura, the prohibition of eating chametz. That's all for L'doros. But again, concurring with the Ran, it would be certainly permissible for them to bake chametz on that first day, on the Pesach as they left Mitzrayim, and that's what the pasuk says. But it was not chametz, not because it was aser, but because they left so quickly. A different approach, still within Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. And again, Rabbi Yossi HaGlili has this opinion, it's in the Mishnah in Maseches Pesachim, that the first Pesach was one day. And the Malbim explains that according to Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, perhaps indeed Pesach, Mitzrayim was one day, and all of the halachas applied. It means you couldn't eat chametz on that day, you couldn't own chametz on that day, and still the pasuk explains that the reason why they didn't bake chametz is because they left in a hurry. Ha-ketzad, how can this be? Here, the Malbim is in concurrence with a famous position of one of his, the earlier Meforshim, the Makneh, the Haflor, Pinchas Alevi Horowitz, who states that the idea, the well-known idea for us in Torah, that the day always starts the night before. Every calendar date always begins in the evening and then moves to the morning. That is only true or only comes into play post Matan Torah. But before Matan Torah, actually, the evening belonged to the day before. That's a very interesting idea. There's a great deal of discussion about it. How does it relate to Vayera Vayivoker and so on and so forth? The source of the Haflah is in Parshas Noach, where Hashem tells Noach that the day will continue. The Yom Valayla Lo Yishbosu, day and night will not cease. Yom Valayla, first Yom and then night. So says the Haflah. It remains true for Bnei Noach, even after Matan Torah, as far as we're concerned, and was true for Bnei Yisrael before Matan Torah. And indeed, one may say that one can see this explicitly in the Pasuk, because in Pasuk Yud Ches of Perek Yud Beis, we take a look, we'll see something interesting. Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Ches, which reads, Barishon, in the first month, Ba'arba'asar lachodesh ba'erev toklu matzos. On the 14th, in the evening, eat matzos. Now let's ask a simple question. When do we eat matzos? We don't eat matzos on the evening before the 14th. We eat matzos on the evening after the 14th. The Torah says, Bar ba'asar ba'era tochlu matzos. That's talking about the evening after the 14th. But then it's not the 14th anymore. It's already the 15th. We call it the 15th. Seder night is the 15th. Yes, said the Malbim. Seder night for us is the 15th because we are post-Matan Torah, and that evening is now belongs to the 15th that comes after it. But before Matan Torah, it belonged to the 14th that came before it. And the truth of the matter is, says Malbim, this will help us answer a very interesting question. We see the attention paid to detail. There's a famous halacha that it's a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. That we know, not that we need that much encouragement, but lemaisa, it's a mitzvah. What's the source in the Torah for that mitzvah? I think it's quite well known. The pasuk in Parshas Emor says, "B'tishah lachodesh ba'erev is Yom Kippur." B'tishah lachodesh ba'erev, says the Gemara in a few places. Well, Yom Kippur is not on the 9th; it's on the 10th. So the erev belongs to the 10th, not the 9th. So how can you say "B'tishah lachodesh ba'erev"? Says the Gemara, apparently we're being told that the mitzvah of Yom Kippur begins on the night before the 9th, namely the mitzvah to eat on the day before Yom Kippur. That's the source of this mitzvah, to eat before Yom Kippur. The disparity of Batisha Lachodish Ba'erev, because the Erev doesn't belong to the 9th anymore. It must be that the whole thing is pulled back a day. So many people have the same question. Tosas asked this question. How come when it came to Yom Kippur and the pasuk says Batisha Lachodish Ba'erev, we're up in arms? Erev doesn't belong to the 9th, that's already the 10th. And in Parshas Bo, when it says Ba'ar Ba'asal Erev, no one says anything. It's exactly the same issue. As surely as Batisha Lachodish Ba'erev, but the Erev doesn't belong to the 9th that preceded it, so you've got to say something, so too in Parshas Bo, the 14th Ba'erev, it doesn't belong to the 14th. Someone should say something. And no one said anything. The reason why, says the Malbim, is because Parshas Bo is before Matan Torah. And before Matan Torah, the Erev after the 14th actually does belong to the 14th. It's fine. After Matan Torah, the evening after the 9th is no longer the 9th. But before Matan Torah, the evening after the 14th is still the 14th. So, says Malbim, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Pesach that year was only one day. Which day? The 14th. Well, when does the 14th end? It ends in the night after the 14th. And therefore, by the time we left Mitzrayim, it was already Motzei Pesach. As if to say, the day of Pesach began with the day of the 14th, ended in the following night. By the time they left, it's not Pesach anymore. It's Isruchag. You can eat chametz and Isruchag, and therefore the pasuk says, but they didn't bake chametz because they left in a hurry. The Isser was yesterday to bake chametz, not today. And in fact, this is mefurish in the pasuk at the beginning of Maaseh. The pasuk left Mitzrayim, mimachras haPesach, the day after Pesach. Those are words black or white in Parshas Maaseh. Mimachras haPesach. We normally say we left Mitzrayim on Pesach. What's Pesach about? Celebrating leaving Mitzrayim. Says the pasuk, we left Mitzrayim the day after Pesach. Because that year and the way the days were configured, Pesach had already happened on the 14th before we left Mitzrayim on the 15th. So these are chidushim. And the chidushim have not finished. Because the Ramban also is discussing the question, again to reiterate the question is, why does the pasuk tell us that we didn't bake chametz because we left so quickly? You can't have chametz, it's Pesach. That's the question. Says Ramban, actually, one needs to know how to read the pasuk. If our question is, why does the pasuk tell us that they didn't eat chametz because they left quickly? Says Ramban, look at the pasuk carefully and see if you still think that that's the case. You see, once again, our pasuk under consideration is pasuk lamates. Vayofres habotzek asher yotzim mitzrayim ugos matzos kilo chometz. They left the dough. They baked the dough that they took with them from Mitzrayim. Matzos no chometz. Kigarshim mitzrayim lecholis mameir. They were thrown out and they didn't have time to tarry. Says Ramban, you should note something very interesting. The word ki means because, and it comes to explain something. In our pasuk, if you look carefully, you will see that the word ki appears twice. For once again, the pasuk says, "Vayofu es habotzek asher yotzim mitzrayim ugos matzos ki." That's the first ki lo chometz. Number two, ki gorshu mitzrayim. If the word ki means to explain something, and the word ki features twice in the pasuk, that means that it is explaining two things. Well, how many things need explaining? Well, actually, says Ramban, two. Number one, the first question is, how come they baked matzahs and not chometz? That's a good shaila. Another question is, why are they baking when they left Mitzrayim? How come no one baked already before? These are two separate questions. Again, question number one is, why matzah and not chametz? And number two, why here when they're leaving? Those are the two questions that the pasuk is addressing. And the way that it's to be read is as follows. Vayofu es habotzek asher yotzim mitzrayim. They baked the dough that they took from Mitzrayim. Ugos matzos. Number one, they baked it as matzah. Kilo chametz. Ki, because it couldn't be chametz. Why couldn't it be chametz? Because it's Pesach. And the second thing that needs to be explained is, but why are they baking it on the way? Ki garshu mi Mitzrayim, because they were thrown out of Mitzrayim. Lechulis mameya. So what's very interesting is the pasuk for Ramban, it's almost like a palindrome. As if to say, point one is they baked on the way. Point number two is they baked matzah. Why? These two things need to be explained. The internal circuit of the pasuk is matzah, because it couldn't be chametz, because obviously it can't be chametz, because it's Pesach. And then coming back to the opening point that they baked on the way, that, says the pasuk, is because ki garshu mimitzrayim. And therefore it's an amazing chidush in parshanut. But actually, according to Ramban, essentially the question has been diffused, because looked at this way, the pasuk is never indicating that the reason why they baked matzah is because they left in a hurry. The reason why they baked matzah, it's because they couldn't make chametz, because it's Pesach, kilo chametz. Them leaving in a hurry is said an explanation of why they baked on the way. Just a final explanation, and so different from each other, Kedarka Shel Torah. It's from a sefer called the Sifsei Kohen Ala Torah, the Shach Ala Torah, not to be confused with the Shach on Shulchan Aruch. And he concurs with Ramban, that actually the Isser of Chometz was in vogue, was in play. And still the Pasuk says, but they baked because they left in a hurry. And our question was, you don't need that explanation if it's Pesach anyway, they couldn't be Chometz. So the Shach says a Chiddush, but others pick it up afterwards. If we take a look at the Pasuk that precedes Lamed Tes, we've been focusing on Lamed Tes, they baked. Let's have a look at Pasuk Lamed Ches. Begam Erev Rav Ala Itam. Erev Rav came with them. The mixed multitude came with the Yisrael. But Sonu Bokar Mikne Kaved Me'od. Now, Pasuk Lamed Ches has been describing the Erev Rav accompanying B'nai Yisrael. And the very next Pasuk says, and they baked matzahs, not chometz, because they left in a hurry. So our question was, well, it's Pesach. Says the Shach, it could be that those that Pasuk Lamed Ches is referring to are the ones referred to in Lamed Ches, the Erev Rav. The Erev Rav have attached themselves to the Jewish people. They're not Jewish yet. They don't have mitzvahs of Pesach. And therefore, the Erev Rav that came with them, they baked matzahs and not chometz. The Jewish people can never bake chometz, even if they want to do. It's Pesach. But the Erev Rav, they are the ones who baked, ended up also, if they joined the Jewish people, Hashkocha saw to it that they also didn't bring any chometz into the equation because they left so quickly. Now, that's quite a thing to say, because really what we're saying is, aside from the Parshanut here, is that the Erev Rav were also thrown out of Mitzrayim, which is interesting, because perhaps we may be inclined to picture the Erev Rav as rather spur-of-the-moment opportunist, as if to say, the Jewish people are leaving, all of a sudden they decided, I'd like to go with them. No one threw them out. But rather you see from here that the Erev Rav was actually a distinct group of people who'd already attached themselves to the Jewish people. They saw value in the Jewish people. They associated with them. They were also thrown out, because the words Garshum and Mitzrayim, if they're about the Erev Rav, we're saying the Erev Rav was thrown out with the Jewish people. That's quite a thing to say. However, says the Shach, you can see in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, it states, Vatechezak Mitzrayim Al Ha'am Lemaher L'Shacham Min Ha'aretz. Mitzrayim prevailed upon the Am. Now the Zohar Kodesh says that whenever the word Am is used with reference to this group of people, it means the Erev Rav as distinct from Yisrael or B'nai Yisrael. Pasuk Lamed Gimel looked at that way as telling us that the Am, the Erev Rav, were also prevailed upon to leave. And therefore, back to Lamed Ches, which describes them as leaving, Lamed Ches says they are the ones who, they had no mitzvahs of Pesach and chometz and matzah, but in the end they baked matzah anyway because they left so quickly. A comment, just a concluding comment, again, it's these final two Perushim, the Ramban and the Shach, will certainly, there are ways to explain the Pasuk, but they do not seem to be in consonance with the Haggadah, because the Haggadah, seemingly, when we ask the question, matzah zushonu okle mashuma, why do we eat matzah? The answer is because the dough wasn't able to rise because we left so quickly, which means, as per the Ramban, it sounds like the reason why we eat matzah is as a remembrance of the fact that we left quickly. According to the Ramban, it wasn't connected to that. It was matzah because it wasn't chometz. And certainly one may say that the approach of the Shach, that it's the Erev Rav who left so quickly, and therefore their dough became matzah, that should hardly be of enduring significance for B'nai Yisrael themselves, to eat into the mitzvah of matzah, as if to say, all Jewish people should eat matzah from this point onwards, to remember the Erev Rav. We don't have such fond memories of the Erev Rav. And certainly the mitzvah should be to commemorate the way that they left Mitzrayim, but those are questions that no doubt those Mepharshim would be able to handle. But in any case, just to pay to this pasuk, we mention it so often, and it's one of the benchmark psukim of Seder night, to see the iyunim and the relevant discussions that come out. We'll leave it over there for this evening.